It's November 10th. On today's edition of Within Reach, we discuss the 2012 presidential election and the victory of President Barack Obama, and preview the Lady Lions opener against Howard University. This is Within Reach.
Thank you for joining us today for our second episode of Within Reach.
Presented by the Scrubgrass Institute. Again, I am Tim Rumble.
And again, I'm Stephen Payne.
We are both the co-founders and co-directors of the Scrubgrass Institute.
Definitely.
And the two issues we're going to speak about today are the 2012 presidential election, in which Barack Hussein Obama, again, won re-election, 308 votes to,
what was it? Well, we have to wait and see on Florida.
That's true.
Though, apparently the AP did just call Florida for Barack Obama, according to some of my sources. So, Definitely, you know, that's a really big boost. The Romney campaign essentially conceded Florida. We'll talk a little bit more about the election in a minute. Another topic we're going to talk about today is the upcoming Lady Lions basketball season.
Versus Howard University.
So, a lot of really exciting games this season that are forthcoming, so we're really excited for that team, and we'll preview their season a little bit later.
And but, I hope by our preview we could make you guys excited for this season as well.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely one of our goals here. Additionally, so let's start, you know, with the big news of the week. So obviously, if you had to put the week in review, what would be the biggest event? Obviously, the election. And the re-election of Barack Obama to the presidency by an electoral college victory that's actually lower than his last victory, which is actually the first time in a very long time that a president has won fewer electoral votes in their re-election efforts. So definitely something to keep in mind, but handedly, President Obama won re-election, winning the key battleground states, Florida, Ohio, Virginia, and Colorado, doing a sweep of the four major states. Romney needed to win all of those, and Obama won all four of those. So that's something that really big. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see the victory to this scale coming.
I probably didn't see Romney winning Ohio. I think the unemployment rate there was low enough for Obama to pass by. I think the bailout for the auto industry really helped out there.
Definitely.
But I really thought Florida was going to go to Romney.
I did too.
I really think that maybe Marco Rubio had some kind of influence there on Latinos, or I felt like there would, you know, it's a higher unemployment rate there. I thought that would maybe influence it as well.
And what's interesting is that if you took the polls leading up to the election at their face value, which the Romney campaign insisted over and over again, those polls were not accurate because they were overestimating the Democratic turnout. Well, it turns out they were actually underestimating the Democratic turnout, which is unbelievable to me. But those same polls showed Romney ahead in Florida consistently.
And also shows you that early voting doesn't really matter, I guess, anymore.
Right. And but I tweeted after the election while President Obama was making his victory speech, if you will, when he said, "I have the best campaign team in history."
It's true.
I tweeted, "That is not an exaggeration. That is a fact." His work in getting reelected with a 7.9% unemployment rate, I think, is absolutely outstanding. I think all of the campaign staff, all of the strategists, David Axelrod, Stephanie Cutter, and all the way down the line deserve a lot of credit for this victory because it was something that I did not see coming. I think that Wasserman Schultz had exceedingly nothing to a limited role in this. This was all the Obama campaign. This wasn't the DNC. And the DNC has proven election after election that they are incompetent of truly running a campaign. I think you'll notice that in the House elections.
And I think the Republican National Committee had more of a stake in Romney's election, too. I guess Romney took, you know, the RNC's platform more seriously than Barack Obama took the DNC's platform more seriously.
Well, and I think the DNC finds itself, as often the party of an incumbent finds itself, in a very awkward position.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the DNC website, it looks like Obama basically changed the whole party, which is essentially what happened to the Democratic Party after consecutive losses by Al Gore and John Kerry, and then Obama comes in and brings this fresh air. Mm-hmm.
Almost like a Jimmy Carter kind of reprisal after Nixon scandal.
Except the difference between Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama, the parallels were lining up.
Let's say they're not...
Almost
the differences
exactly.
Aren't peanuts, so to say.
Yeah, sure, to reference this peanut farmer background for those that aren't familiar with that. But I will say, though, that the parallels can no longer be drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no... there really is no comparison anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
So we're setting a new precedent for elections anymore.
I agree. And that it... I feel like what happened with the Democratic Party in this election will play out and will be consequential for years to come. Because the winning coalition by the Democratic Party was an absolute triumph.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have Mitt Romney, who wins white people by right around 60%. You have Mitt Romney, who wins older people. You have Mitt Romney, who wins kind of the upper age level, not
mm-hmm.
quite an elder.
Not as quite we're used to seeing as, you know, seniors voting for a Democratic ticket anymore.
Right. But
I mean, I think the New Dealers have gone and died. I think there's a new age of
party identification.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. But it just strikes me that President Obama's winning coalition was so expansive.
And it
dealt with Hispanics, it dealt
mm-hmm.
with minorities, it dealt with African Americans. Some places in Pennsylvania, and we'll talk a little bit more about Pennsylvania in a minute, some places in Pennsylvania at over 99% of precincts in Philadelphia went to the president. And you have these coalitions, you know, and President Obama made little winks and little nods
mm-hmm.
to these coalitions
mm-hmm.
and got the vote, and it paid off. His little interview with Robin Roberts.
Mm-hmm. Cancer survivor, ABC host.
Yeah, exactly. His interview where he said, oh, well, I support gay marriage. Well, seemingly out of nowhere. And how do you just kind of change your mind on an issue like that?
Market research, probably.
Right.
Some kind
but
of
look what
demography
happened.
Change.
Look what happened. You have another group in the nation that then wholeheartedly supports his candidacy. Not necessarily based off of, but that's an issue with the Republican Party that they need to address.
I think the Democrats not also do well with demography, but I think they also do well with bringing issues down to the voter, being able to communicate their side of the issue and what kind of stake these voters have in the issue.
Well, and I think that's something that the Romney campaign criticized Obama of. When you talk about making this campaign about small issues.
I think likability is also a factor, even though...
Oh, I know, but what I'm saying is that when Barack Obama started making the points that Mitt Romney wants to cut Big Bird, and, it just kind of trivialized the campaign, but I think that was beneficial. Because I think he understood that my constituents want little sound bites. They want little lines and little quotes that this guy doesn't get it. Barack Obama fundamentally had the ability to be trusted
mm-hmm.
and to be likable.
I mean, could voters really care about the House Ways and Means Committee or some kind of, you know, upscale Benghazi Libya gate scandal?
Right.
I don't think they just really care about that.
I just think,
what does it mean to them? What kind of programs can the government bring to them?
So,
in a cost-effective manner.
What's interesting, though, is that you talk about the all-important independent voters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look
your swing voters.
If you look at the exit polls, Mitt Romney won independent voters.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that those independent voters aren't the independent voters of 10 years ago.
So,
Those independent voters are ex-Republicans that no longer align with the party. The Democratic Party has actually grown so much so that independent voters are essentially disenfranchised Republicans that now feel like they're an independent, that they don't align with this party. And of course they were coming back home to Romney, but that doesn't mean those were truly independents. It's a problem the Republicans have to work on if they want to be successful in national office. In national offices. Statewide offices, local races, I think Republicans are very poised.
I mean, just look at how many counties they win.
If not at an advantage in Senate races, in House races. They consistently overperform in those races. And I think if Obama was not on the ticket this election, the Republican electorate turns out. That's an issue with the Democratic Party, though, is that they have a very large winning coalition, but that coalition of voters won't turn out to a midterm election, definitely won't turn out to a primary. So, you know, when you have very vulnerable candidates like Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, senator,
who's an institution,
if this were a midterm election, I'd say Casey versus Tom Smith in a midterm election would be a toss-up. Because, I mean, Casey rode Obama's wave, but there's a lot of dissatisfaction. Because
you also see Tom Casey on the ticket Bob Casey and Barack Obama on the same ticket, and they come there for Barack Obama.
And they have the Democrats, and they bring the votes home. Now let's continue to talk about Pennsylvania.
Center County, wow.
Center County. So as of now, the votes that we had at the end of our unofficial results before, I guess, absentee ballots, provisional ballots, but Mitt Romney won Center County by 20 votes.
Which is surprising for a college town. I think, you know, the students would turn out for a big vote, but I've seen so many Romney signs around campus, and I've seen a lot of Republicans around campus, I think, being more active than Democrats and campus. I know, campus Republicans have been holding more, you know, speakers and more meetings than college Democrats.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, is that what I find interesting is that there was no campaign appearance at Penn State by either party, but especially the Obama campaign.
Well, maybe Mitt Romney just wanted to just give away Pennsylvania.
I'm not as surprised about Mitt Romney not trying to make a play here. Not necessarily surprising. He tried to make a play in some of the other...
But wouldn't Obama want to reinforce it?
Don't you think that? That's what I'm saying. So then why was there no appearance by Biden or Obama ever? So
starting, or Michelle, which you would think would
Michelle,
be...
Michelle, Dr. Jill Biden, my favorite community college promoter. But why there was no visit to Penn State, I don't know. Now, there's been talk...
Well, Obama came here, 2 years ago to talk about green energy.
But there's been talk that is Penn State a liability? Do you want to stand up at Penn State with the reputation now? And that was a question that two of my professors posed to me in two separate classes this semester. Is Penn State a place where you want to have a campaign rally? Is that a news event that you want to have? And it turned out this election that no one made a campaign appearance.
It's almost like they foresaw the Graham Spanier indictment.
Well, and it's like they understood that the drama, the controversy, do they want to be seen here? So that's a very interesting dynamic. But speaking of Penn State's role in the election, Kathleen Kane.
Yes, that probably a big, like, atonement vote, you know, going on right
now. And I think the Penn State vote, obviously I think Kathleen Kane would have won regardless.
And alumni around the state, I mean, would be compelled to vote for her
now,
as well.
Now, Kathleen Kane had the most votes, if you look at the election results, of any candidate in Pennsylvania, including Barack Obama,
really,
including Senator Casey. She had the most votes, and you want to know why that is?
She's a prosecutor, not a politician.
Well, as the campaign ads would want you to take away, but it's the Penn State factor, and the Penn State factor is going to be a factor in these elections.
Well, wouldn't the candidates want to exploit that if they're associated with Penn State somehow?
Well, I think Kathleen Kane did when she said, I'll investigate Corbett's role in this situation. 2014, mark November 2014 on your calendar. the day Tom Corbett goes down. Penn Staters mm-hmm. will not allow this governor to be reelected.
Mm-hmm. And I think we'll probably have some kind of crucifix, probably in front of him, made somehow. But speaking about crucifixes, how about those Lady Lions going to put it to Howard tomorrow?
I know, and you know what? I'm so excited for the season to start. You know, it's always an exciting time when it's Lady Lion basketball season.
More exciting this year,
season.
I think.
I think they have the highest expectations on this team.
And it's probably the most developed team, you know.
Since 2003-2004. That was the last time that the Lady Lions really were nationally relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Other than last year, but still not to the extent that I think they would have liked to be. Mm-hmm. And not to the extent, certainly, that they are this year. Mm-hmm. They lost one senior, Zsa Zsa Gray,
which
who made
wasn't
a
much
significant contribution in during some games.
Mm-hmm.
Three-point shots.
She was probably point-slash-shooting guard.
Yeah.
Outside perimeter threat.
But
not a starter, usually. Okay, she was usually a starter, yes. But the duo of A.B., Alex Bentley, and Maggie Lucas can't really be rivaled in the backcourt there.
And what we'll see this year is the addition of Dara Taylor. So, in case any listeners aren't familiar with Dara Taylor comes to Penn State from Maryland. Maryland has a strong women's basketball program. She was a McDonald's All-American in high school. Didn't like the playing time she was receiving as a freshman, transferred to Cocuyes, Washington's Lady Lions, set out on the bench last year.
Which is an NCAA requirement.
Set out on the bench last year, and this year will be making an impact. She's a junior, so she has 2 years left. And so I think, let's say if Alex Bentley gets into foul trouble, you'll
mm-hmm.
see how our offense can continue to click. Maggie Lucas doesn't have to turn into the point
mm-hmm.
guard. She can remain the shooting guard, which is honestly where Maggie Lucas belongs.
And I'm crossing my fingers when I say this, but it's probably good to have another backcourt expert in case one of those two get injured. I mean, the Lady Lions haven't had that problem. I don't remember, you know, having Lady Lions having the injury bug at all.
Right.
Except for Marissa Wolf, but so what is her status, actually? I have no clue about Marissa Wolf's status. I mean,
well, I think, I think Marissa Wolf is ready to play this season. And you know, I really like the work that Marissa Wolf does. She's been a captain now the past season and will be a captain again. And as a lot of the players refer to her kind of as the mother hen,
mm-hmm.
as Maggie Lucas referred to her on her ESPNW blog.
She makes sure all the players get into their, you know, places on time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So probably makes really good brownies as well, but I mean, but I haven't even seen her play a lot last year.
You know, she made contributions on the floor. She actually had one of the highest percentages,
mm-hmm.
shooting percentages.
Mm-hmm.
Was very accurate, surprisingly. But you can tell she doesn't have that touch on the ball, and she doesn't have the athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to remember what Cocuyes Washington was thinking when Marissa Wolf was recruited. So you have to remember that recruiting class. That was Cocuyes Washington's first nationally ranked recruiting class.
Mm-hmm.
That was the class of Nikki Green, the highest ranked recruit coming out of that class.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Bentley, second highest. And then those are really the two stars. Cocuyes recruited Mia Nixon, who transferred from Boston College,
mm-hmm.
Additionally. And then also Marissa Wolf. So that class, you know, Cocuyes kind of had to, you know, make sure that she was getting everyone. So I think Marissa Wolf is
and again, she wasn't that experienced anyway. As a head coach.
I think Marissa Wolf hasn't really made a huge impact on the court, but her off-the-court impact, I assume, is significant. You know, she's a player that reminds me kind of like Gisele Studevant,
mm-hmm.
who might not get much playing time, might really not be at the level that these other
players will get minutes,
and really needs to provide substantial minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So in their short time on the court, Marissa Wolf, Gisele Studevant need to contribute.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the breakout stars of the Nittany Lions this year, I think, is going to be Nikki Green. I think with all the attention mm-hmm. to the front court, well, sorry, back court, that I think she's going to get the ball more often and maybe become one of the best centers in the Big Ten.
I think easily. And I think she's going to look to be one of the best centers in the nation this year. And what's interesting is Coquelis Washington has repeatedly said Nikki Green is playing with an extreme level of confidence. This is a new year for Nikki Green. But what's nice about Nikki Green is that she was prone to being in foul trouble. And it was an issue that plagued that team last year in certain situations. There really weren't too many times where I really thought that that really shifted the game. But this year, what we have here at Penn State, a very big bench.
Yes.
We have coming in the lone freshman, Candace Agee, who is coming from California, having never visited campus, committed to Coquelis Washington without coming to campus. I don't understand that.
It must be first that Notre all, Dame education.
Yeah, that Notre Dame law degree really must have drawn her here. But Candace Agee, coming after winning the gold medal with the U18 women's national team, you have Tori Waldner, the lone sophomore, on the bench.
Who's also huge.
And both of them are the tallest members of the team. Coquelis Washington is doing an exceptional job at recruiting. I don't think there's any question about that. She is making this team big, she's making them fast, and she's running at a high tempo.
And even though finesse and three-point shots are nice looking, I think she realizes that, you know, power and athleticism really wins the basketball game.
And so we have Candace Agee, Tori Waldner, the addition of some increased playing time and practice for players like Talia East, who I feel like is going to make a bigger contribution this year on the court. But don't forget about one of my favorite Lady Lions, Mia Nixon.
Ooh.
She plays with an intensity and an energy and a touch on the ball. She is a skilled and gifted player. And she's one of my favorite players to watch on that team. I love Maggie Lucas's threes. Alex Bentley's cocky attitude is, and her swagger, as Coquelis Washington
said. But
there's
nothing like a fancy, strong layup as well.
But there's nothing like the energy consistency of Mia Nixon. Mia Nixon, named to the all-region team in the tournament last year. Mia Nixon, the really only true contributor in the loss to UConn that ended the season last year. Mia Nixon gets it done in the paint. Mia Nixon gets it done, and she's definitely a player to watch this year. As a senior, a captain again for the second year, she looks to prove herself and improve on last year's outstanding performance.
And I think, do you think Arielle Edwards is going to lose playing time? She played a lot last year. I mean, she was probably like, you know, she probably played, what, like 5 or 6 minutes a game, you know, filling in pretty well. And sometimes she even started games as well.
Yeah, and Arielle Edwards' role is always kind of in flux. Because I feel like Dara Taylor is kind of...
is the star.
The equivalent of the role of Arielle Edwards. Kind of being the point guard. But what... Arielle Edwards is a very strong jump shot shooter, just like the rest of this team. And a strong three-point shooter as well. Her role, I think, will be determined based on the defense of the other team. She's kind of a wing player, can provide some additional support. She's tall, but she also has a good touch on the ball, and she also has some finesse.
And also, I think that if she doesn't get playing time this year, what's going to happen next year? I mean, when a couple of really, really integral seniors leave, I mean...
her role is going to be magnified.
But you think, you know, at a cost, if she doesn't play a lot this year, what kind of experience is she going to have next year?
Well, I'm not sure that Coquelis Washington can take the gamble of saying, I want to try to
get
Arielle Edwards some playing time. This year is truly all or nothing. This is the year. And you can tell by the efforts that that Coquelis is putting on for this team. Their schedule this year is... their non-conference schedule is challenging. And what's even more impressive about it is it's challenging on the road. This team is going to some very hostile sites. UConn. They're traveling to Texas A&M to play a game. They're traveling to Miami to play a game.
NCAA tournaments aren't won at home. Right. Basically.
And so with the Lady Lions not bidding on hosting the tournament this year, they are going to be on the road. So what – so for the first two games of the postseason. So they need to work on playing in that environment. And so it was an environment that playing at LSU last year, playing LSU at LSU, though the Lady Lions were a superior team, playing in that home environment was a difficulty for them. They won by 10 points, 90-80, but...
But they basically won in the last 3 minutes, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they pulled away in the last 3 minutes, but the whole game was awfully close.
Right, and it shouldn't have been, but that's the home court advantage. Mm-hmm. And that's the nature of the NCAA. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Coquise Washington understands. She scheduled them well for it. Now, next year, conversely, key home matches. Mm-hmm. She's trying to give the team next year. The team next year will still be strong. They'll still be a very good team. They're not going to be at this year's level, though, however. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a struggle for them to win the Big Ten next year. I think they can do it next year. It's going to be a little harder. Mm-hmm. But putting in a bid to host the tournament for next year.
Just like in 2011.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was key for them then. They weren't quite ready yet, and the home court advantage, I think, really helped them. I mean, obviously, they didn't quite pull it out to DePaul, but it was essentially, they essentially won.
But this is it was the team's first game on a national level.
Exactly.
When I think of it.
This team coming up will be much more poised for the national stage.
Mm-hmm.
Dara Taylor, Maggie Lucas, Ariel Edwards, Candace Agee, Tori Waldner.
Nikki Green.
No, these are all players returning.
Sorry, I was trying to read your mind.
No, it's fine. It happens a lot. but those are all players returning. So, though it may be a senior-led team with Alex Bentley, Nikki Green, Mia Nixon leading the charge.
And
there
losing
are,
the guard.
They are. There are a lot of juniors and younger players. So, definitely keep that in mind. This team has a lot of seniors, but there is some talent still to come up that still needs to be cultivated.
Talking about more talent coming up, I think we're going to close today's podcast and make a new one maybe sometime this week. So
we want to thank you so much for listening today to our podcast. We really hope that you get out to support those Lady Lions of Penn State as they take on Howard University at 2 p.m. in the Bryce Jordan Center.
And for the Scrubgrass Institute, I am Tim Rumble.
And I'm Stephen Payne. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time.